going to go ahead and start this recording. Okay. So for the recording, it's March 16, 2019. And we've just finished reading Deuteronomy 11, verse 10 to 12, 19. And these, again, are Moses' words to the people before they enter the land. What did the beginning of this selection remind you of as we're reading it?
That I'm taking you into the land which I've given you. I've sworn to give it to you, and it's the land you will possess.
Right, but what do the words conjure up in your mind when it says, follow these things that I command you today. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul.
The Shema.
The Shema. He basically is going over the Shema, which we've already heard in Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. About talking about it in the way when you get up, when you lie down, when you're walking, when you're sitting in your house. Teach it to your children. That's what I'm saying. It's reminiscent of the Shema in Deuteronomy 6.
It struck me when I was looking at it earlier how incredibly powerful it was. It's talking about your heart, your soul, your land, your eyes, your doorposts, your house, your gates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the whole...
The whole everything?
The whole everything.
Well, gates, when Deuteronomy talks about gates...
It's cities.
So, your house, your city.
It's not just a little personal holiness in your head.
Right, it's a community.
It's a whole you. It's you, yourself, your family, your community.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be part of everything.
Okay, so another thing, this starts out Deuteronomy 11:10. What is that verse in verse 10? What does it say about the promised land? Not like the land of Egypt. What does that mean to you? What is Egypt like?
Oppressive.
Well, no, Egypt's got its war.
Now, it's true, the people were slaves there, right? But in the context of agriculture, what was Egypt like?
It was fertile.
Fertile. Rich. You remember Abraham and Lot? Lot wants to settle down somewhere, and they can't settle together because there's not enough room. And Abram says, you go ahead and choose. You know, if you go to the south, I'll go north. If you go north, I'll go south. And Lot says, oh, I want to go across the valley right there in that big open plain. And the narrator tells us, oh, because this is before Sodom and Gomorrah were overturned, the whole valley of the Jordan was?
Rich.
Do you remember how he describes it? Like the garden of the Lord and like Egypt.
Egypt was the Nile River, and that's the major difference.
Yes. So Egypt today, you know, we think of gray dust pyramids, but Egypt in that day was glorious. Gardens, and they had irrigation. Why? Because they had a huge fat river running down the country called the Nile in English. That river was always there, right? It can flood, it cannot flood, but it's always there. So they had this whole elaborate system of irrigation based off of the Nile. It's consistent. Again, in Assyria, what are the two big rivers in Assyria?
Euphrates.
Prat and Hiddekel, if you want the names.
Assyria.
Ashur. Eretz Ashur. Iraq.
So
you have two big rivers. Also, you know, they are consistent. So what big river goes through this land? Okay, the Jordan is not a big river. In fact, in most countries, they would not call it a river.
Right?
A stream. A creek. It's not a river.
Almost a dry river.
And it's not very dependable if you're trying to irrigate the whole land. So God says, Israel, this land, is not like Egypt. Okay, so in Egypt, you could sow your seed and you could go out and water it just like a garden. See, there's irrigation. It's stable. But this land that you're going into, what is it full of? It drinks rain. And notice also in verse 11, what else is there?
Hills and valleys.
Okay, so how do you have fields of wheat on hills and valleys? Is it easy?
No.
No. It is not suited to large industry of wheat and barley. You can build terraces. And if you go out here, it's beautiful. Everywhere on the little hills, you'll see terraces. Many are not ancient, but some are actually built on ancient terraces because everybody who's ever lived here had to grow crops the same way.
They didn't mention the rocks.
They didn't mention the rocks?
They did not mention the rocks.
Well, yeah, we abound in rocks as well. So this land is very dependent on rain. If there's no rain, your crops die, and then you have a famine. Right? And we have many stories in the Bible that say there was a famine in the land. That's because of a lack of rain. And so people here were very much aware of the need of rain. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about rain and this land, because maybe just take one of these and pass it around. This is in Hebrew, but I'm going to tell you the English. If you pay attention. How many here can read Hebrew letters? One, two, three. Okay. So for those who don't, pay attention really well, and you can put some English around what I'm talking about. Okay, so I have this little circle here, this represents the year. The outer ring are agricultural seasons. Do you have enough back there? Because I can give my copy too. Agricultural seasons is the outer ring. We'll talk about those. Right next to that are the months of the year that we know. And then the middle of the pie are the months of the year in the, quote, Jewish calendar, which is actually the calendar that comes from Babylon. When the Jews were in exile, they adopted the Babylonian calendar. So when you read the Bible, there's actually two systems of calendars that are conflated. The older system just marks months by numbers. And what is the first month?
Aviv.
Aviv, okay, and there's another name?
Nisan.
Nisan is a later name. So when is that in our months?
April, generally.
March, April. So it's spring. The new year starts in spring. But today, who's been here for today, New Year's? When does New Year's happen?
September.
Why?
It's one of the four different systems of...
Right. So Babylon. Because when people went to Babylon, the New Year started in the fall. And they adopted the calendar there, and New Year starts in fall. Now, the New Year festival is actually connected to the biblical festival of the Feast of Trumpets, which is the seventh month, right? They don't call it the first month, it's the seventh month. So nowadays, we have a New Year for everything. So there's, you know, that's the solution, is you have many New Years. And one of them is New Year's in the fall.
Are these actual Babylonian words, or are they just they developed this in Babylon?
Many of the words, yeah, are, well, they're Aramaic words, yes. And some have...
Adar does appear in the scriptures.
Sure. All the Bible was put together for us over many, many years, right? There are different empires, different time periods. Okay? And so the later books, all the books that were written down after the exile, are going to reflect things from the exile. So if you see month names from Babylon, that book is probably written down, or at least edited, after the exile. All right, so let me make sense of this. the second ring at the top, right where the line intersects, that says March. You can go ahead and write March. The next one to the right, April. And follow down May, June, July, August. September would be straight down, September. October, November, December, January, February. Okay, so that's your reference point for our months. And then if you look underneath March, okay, so the Babylonian calendar is lunar-based, so it doesn't correspond exactly to our calendar. And so, you know, it'll vary by 2 weeks or so. That's why the holidays every year, they shift back and forth a bit. And then every 4 years, you get an extra month to... The Adar.
Usually three. Four, sometimes it's four, sometimes it's three.
Seven. Yeah, so you get a filler month, a second Adar. The last month of the year gets doubled some years so that you don't drift into different seasons.
Like this year.
Like the Muslims have a purely lunar calendar, and so Ramadan will keep moving throughout all the seasons of the year. So sometimes Ramadan is in the hottest months possible, you know? And sometimes it might be in winter.
But the main reason has to be that the Bible is very clear that Pesach has to be celebrated on the 15th of the spring month of Aviv.
The beauty of the biblical holidays is they're connected to both the cyclical agricultural cycle of the year and historic events.
Right.
So Pesach, you're leaving Egypt. That was an event in history.
But it's also,
and yet it's also connected to a certain time of the year.
Exactly.
The beginning of the spring. And so then the Pi, if you look at that underneath March, to the right section of March, you'll see Nisan. That's the month of Pesach. Ayar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei, which is also given the older biblical name, Etanim. Cheshvan is given the older biblical name, Bul. Those are probably much older names, like during the Canaanite period. Kislev, Tvat, Shvat Adar. Okay.
Doesn't the word Bul mean a flood?
I'm not sure. Flood, Mabul, is the word flood.
Right.
And I think that's connected to Abubu, which is actually behind the name Tel Aviv. The Aviv in Tel Aviv is not Aviv of spring, it's Abubu.
Tel Aviv comes from Babylon.
Tel Abubu, yeah, it comes from Babylon. Something to do with flooding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay, so back to the point here. This land, what happens in the summer? Has everyone been here in the summer?
Dry.
If you've come from California, it's the same thing. If you don't come from California, it's a little strange, because many places in the rest of the world, it rains in the summer. Here, it does not. Except last year, it did rain in June. Very, very, very exceptional if it rains in the summer. So basically, 6 months out of the year, there's no rain. And then the rest of the year, there is rain. But not just any rain. It's important to know what happens when. So I want to start and just say briefly, Nisan, which is March, April, this section. If you look at that top ring, you'll see the word Malkosh. These are the late spring rains. They're kind of, we're entering in now, although what's happening now could still be Matar. Malkosh are supposed to be the lighter rains. It's the time when you harvest barley and flax. Barley comes before wheat. If you read through the Ten Commandments, you'll see that. Why does it need to be light rain at that point? What do you think?
It would destroy the crop
if it's too heavy. You already have sprouts. Too heavy, you're going to break the stalks, you're going to smash it down and not have your crop. So it's important that you have rain to keep them alive, but you need it to be light. So that's called Malkosh. Then, after that, that's the last rain, then you enter the dry season. So anywhere like mid-April to May, it's starting to be dry. Then the first figs might become ripe. Figs is a summer fruit. A lot of fruits in the summer. Mid-June to mid-July, you have the grape harvest. And then July to August, you have the olive harvest. And then August to September, you have dates, figs, summer figs. So you remember when Amos saw in his vision? God said, what do you see? What did he say? I see a basket of?
Figs.
It literally says, I see a basket of summer. And what he means is the fruit that's collected in the summer, which is figs.
When you see the figs blossom, you know that summer is near.
Yeah. So now that would be on the other side, because there's figs that ripen early, and then there's figs that ripen late. Okay. So that takes us up to mid-September and Sukkot and all of that. Then we have, in this thing, we have Yore. What do you think Yore is? It's the first rains. Are these hard or soft rains?
They can be very hard.
They should be soft. Why do we need soft rains at that point?
Because otherwise you get shocking erosion. Because
yes.
Everything is hard.
So everything is hard from being baked all summer long in the sun with no water. So the soft rains actually prepare the ground for the seed. If you don't get soft rain, your ground is too hard, and it's like rock to try to, you know, dig in. Okay. So then we start our planting season. After you've softened the grain with the rains, you can start to plant. Right here by November, December, you're sowing. And then mid-December, what do you get? You get rain, and snow. And the reason I say rain and rain is because there's different words. And I want to pay attention to that because it kind of matters sometimes. So geshen means rain. That's kind of a general word. Matar also means rain. It tends to be used more in poetry, but it is hard rain. This is the rain of the rainy season. It's not the soft little rain you get in the beginning. It's not the soft little rain you get at the end. This is rain. And then snow is snow. So this is important because this rain is critical to make your crops grow, right? This is the real stuff. This is rainy season. However, if this rain comes at the wrong time, it's going to kill your crops. If it comes too early, it wipes out the topsoil. If it comes too late, it destroys your crops that are already growing. So it's very, very important, A, that you get it, and B, that it comes at the right time. So it's a two-pronged thing there. And then the first blooms in January, February are? What first blooms here in the country when you look around?
Almonds.
And what does that remind you of?
Jeremiah 1.
Jeremiah 1. What does God say in Jeremiah 1?
I'm watching over my word to fulfill it.
Yes. I'm watching over my world. Word.
Word.
And he's doing another play on words. We talked about Amos. Oh, I didn't fill in the play on words with Amos. He sees a basket of kites, which in the north they would have probably said kits, summer fruit. And then God says, yes, you've seen correctly, because the end is coming. And the word for end is kits. So whether you say kites and kits or kits and kits, there's a play on word there. Jeremiah gives us another play on words. What is the word for almond tree? Anyone know? Well, how do we say almond?
Shaked.
So a shkedia is a tree. It has a shaked. And then God says, I'm watching over my word. Ani shoked. You hear the similarity?
Shaked, I don't know.
What's
the same word anyway?
It's the same word depending on the tense. I believe, though, that in Jeremiah 1, it is the participle. But we can look at Jeremiah 1 really quick. Is it verse 11? 11, yes. So, verse 11. Vayidvar Adonai elai lemor, ma ata ro'e Yirmiyahu, va'omar makel shaked ani ro'e, va'yomer Adonai elai, hetavt lirot ki shoked ani al dvari. So he says, I see a stick of an almond, shaked, and then God says, yes, you've looked really well, because shoked ani. Okay. So that's Jeremiah's little play on these things. What is the word for rain that we're going to get in Deuteronomy? Look in verse 11. A land that drinks in water from the rains. So.
Oh, that's matar.
It's matar.
Yeah.
Yes. It's matar. It's the rain of the rainy season. This is the rain that makes the stuff grow. Without this rain, the crops don't grow. Now, it is interesting that in verse 12 he says, my eye is always on this land from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. So, in other words, I'm watching this whole agricultural cycle. Because not only do you need matar, what do you need? You need everything together, and you need the matar to come at the right time.
And you even need the dry season at the right time.
You even need the dry season, yes. Okay. So, if you keep my law, like everything's going to go well, you're going to have an abundance. And if you don't, you won't. Now look at verse 14.
That ties up. What's the famous psalm? You know, God man his son is nor sleeps, he's watching over Israel. I mean,
yeah.
It's
yeah, Psalm 21.
Was it 121? Doesn't matter. It's just the same thing. It's a bit later, it's poetic and so on, but it's the same. That's what God does.
No, it's it is. Hold on.
21:23.
Psalm 121. I will lift up my eyes to the hill. Where does my help come from? That's a question, by the way. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He won't let your foot slip. He who watches over you doesn't slumber. La, la, la. What were you looking for?
That was it.
That he doesn't slumber. Yeah, his eyes are always there.
It's the same idea.
Yeah, you're right, because you could view the dry season as slumber time, sleeping, everything's sleeping or dead. Now, what did the Canaanites think about this? Anyone know anything about Canaanite religion? Who is the big Canaanite god? Baal. Yes. And in the pantheon, when you have more than one god, they all have different roles and functions. What is Baal's role?
Fertility
and rain. Because without rain, you don't get crops, right? So the worship of Baal is very strong in this land. Why? You need rain. It's so dependent on rain. Everybody recognizes that. There are no major rivers. You need rain. Therefore, they're going to pray to Baal all the time. So that's so strongly rooted here. Moses has to say, look, do not do what they're doing. Because they are worshiping Baal everywhere because they recognize they need rain. And so our selection is saying, I am watching over this land, I being God. I'm the one that's going to bring rain. And what is it dependent on?
You're trusting me to do it.
Doing what I tell you to do and not doing the way they're doing. So they might have fertility rites. The later prophets, they talk about going up on every high hill. They had these bamot. Like if you go to Tel Dan, you can see a bama, a raised up place in the city, a big tree. These were religious symbols. Apparently there was some kind of fertility cult where you would go and sleep with a temple prostitute to guarantee fertility either for your family or your field, whatever. And so these are the things that God is completely against, saying, I don't want you to worship me in anything that resembles this.
We used to get publicity at Baptist Hospital. Dr. Lindsay would pray for rain, and it was public around when he prayed in the rain.
Oh, yeah?
David Bibb would always bring the rain report in and say, how much did we get over the weekend? And then he prayed for more.
Well, this year is looking like a good year.
Yeah.
We're getting good rain.
It's going to be 100 in a couple months. So.
And we should give thanks for it. Not
yes.
I noticed when I was looking at it before that there's actually, it's like a condition. If you earnestly obey, then.
Yeah.
It was like a consequence. If you go after these other gods.
And that's why Elijah, when he's dealing with Ahav, the king, and his wife, Jezebel. Who does Jezebel worship?
The Baals.
Baal. She's a very devout worshiper of Baal. She's got 400 prophets worshiping Baal. The minority are worshiping God at this point. And Eliyahu, Elijah, the prophet.
The majority are worshiping Baal.
The majority are worshiping Baal. The minority are worshiping the Lord.
Yeah, you said this
now. Oh, sorry. I said it wrong. So Eliyahu, what does he tell Ahav is going to happen? What's this big sign that God's the one in control?
The cloud, is that the one with the rain?
He says for 3 years it's not going to rain. Okay? So if they think Baal is in charge of rain, this is like putting Baal in his place. Like, no, Baal is not in control. God's in control. And to prove it, you're not going to get rain for 3 years.
On the Carmel, when you battle Baal.
Yeah,
the
right. That was a showdown at the very end, but there was already 3 years of drought, and you know
it's
people are.
To see where they need to fall. Instead of being good and following rules and all the food things and all the rest of it and the moral laws, sort of extra, you just pay money for what you want.
Mm-hmm. The
you know,
easy fix.
If you sacrifice this, you do that. It's a concrete thing.
Yeah. I mean, worshiping God also had concrete aspects to it, but you're right that there's a complete dependency on God. It's not magic. There's not a formula where you do this and you guarantee fertility. Yeah. It's based on your relationship to God. That's true. But look at verse 14, back to Deuteronomy 11. What does it say? I will give
rain for your land in its season.
In its season. There you go. And we looked at this and we know why that's so important, right? It's what word for rain is he using there? Close. Matar. And they come together. So you're right in that sense. This is the serious rain. It's hard rain. And if it comes at the wrong season, it destroys your crop. If you remember in the slaps of Egypt, the plagues of Egypt, the 10 plagues of Egypt, it uses matar, the rain that comes down and it destroys the crop because it comes at the wrong time. Geshen?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I just wish everything here seems to be matar.
Well, this is Deuteronomy talking.
Right.
And if you notice, okay, so verse 14 says, I'm going to give you rain in its season, the yoreh, Yoreh, that's this stuff that prepares the ground. Umalkosh, that's the stuff that we're going into now at the Aviv, March, April. And because of that, because everything is going to come and it's going to come in the right order, you're going to be able to gather in your grain, your wine, and your oil. And notice here, Gemma, he also is using different words for grain, or the general word for grain. Tirosh uses a young wine, and Yitzhar is a little different word for oil. So it's a little poetic in some senses. And you're going to have so much that even your cattle are going to eat well and everyone's going to be fat. But is the fact that the land is fertile enough? Should you then just be contented? According to here. What does it say?
Well, you'll get enough. Sorry.
Be careful, yeah.
Maybe entice the two other gods.
Yeah, because there's two things that entice you. One is the famine. You don't have the rain, so you think, well, I better go worship Baal because maybe that's a real way to get rain. The other problem is what happened in Jeroboam's reign when you're living in the lap of luxury. You have everything you need. The crops are working. Everything's abundant. You're doing well. And then what happens? You think, oh, I'm just fine. I don't really need God.
Would it be the opposite? Like, if they didn't have crops, if they have crops and know God's helping them, as I said,
you would think, but that's not the way human hearts go. The minute, even everyone, I mean, you can say, I've been blessed by God. And what you're referring to oftentimes is, you know, I have enough money, I have health, I have this or that. And you take it to be God's blessing. Therefore, if God's blessing me, I must be okay. And then that's forgetting, like, well, no, sometimes you get blessed even if you're not okay. Because Jeroboam was not okay. He told people not to go down to the temple in Jerusalem. He's trying to set up his own thing. He's doing it his own way. It's not okay. So all the prophets had to go tell him, you think you're okay because you're being blessed right now, but watch out. The time is coming. It's all going to be reversed because you're not okay. So yeah, you would think. You'd think we'd all remember, but we don't.
The interesting word thing here, the word is, lest your heart be deceived.
Yeah.
And we just get very easily deceived by all sorts of things.
That's why we're supposed to put God's word on our hearts.
Right.
On our beings and bind them as a sign on our hand. Like, do something that you're reminded all the time so that when the fat times come, you still remember how dependent on God you are. You're supposed to teach them to your kids. So that's the part where it goes into this whole Shema, the reiteration of the Shema. I also wanted to point out, we see some of the borders of the land again down here. If you look in verse 24, from the desert to the Lebanon, from the river, the Euphrates River, to the Mediterranean Sea will be your border. We talked about this before, but I just wanted to point out again that I think he's talking about the north section there. If you go from Lebanon east, you hit the Euphrates River very fast because the Euphrates River works up like this. And so if you're up here, Euphrates River is there. I don't think he's talking about here. From Jerusalem to the Euphrates River would cover all of Jordan and part of Iraq. And I don't think that was ever considered the promised land. So just to keep that in view, because sometimes they don't give the specifics. They're kind of imagining that you understand based on the context. Okay, so now let's turn to Isaiah 30. We'll start verse 23. Okay, Isaiah is always going back and forth between like warnings and future blessing. And so, in this prophecy, he's talking about a future time when they are going to hear from God and they're going to hate their idols, they're going to throw them away. And then you get verse 23.
Uh-huh.
Does someone want to read it?
Who's going?
He will also send you rain for the seed you sow in the ground, and the food that comes from the land will be rich and plentiful. In that day, your cattle will graze in the broad meadows. The oxen In the day of great slaughter, when the towers fall, streams of water will flow on every high mountain and every lofty hill. The moon will shine like the sun, and the sunlight will be seven times brighter, like a light of seven full days, when the Lord binds up the bruises of his people and heals the wounds he inflicted. See, the name of the Lord comes from afar, with burning anger and dense clouds of smoke. His lips are full of wrath, and his tongue is a consuming fire. His breath is like a rushing torrent, rising up to the neck. He shakes the nations in a sieve of destruction. He places in the jaws of the peoples a bit that leads them astray. And you will sing as on the night you celebrate a holy festival. Your hearts will rejoice as when people go up with flutes to the mountain of the Lord, to the rock of Israel.
Wow.
Okay, so what are some themes that you see that are similar from our Deuteronomy passage, to our Deuteronomy passage?
Rain for your seed.
Rain for your seed. And what kind of rain? Matar. Here's matar.
Rich and plentiful.
This rain, this is the main rain, the rain that brings seeds. And the result is that you're going to have plenty to eat, so much so that even those animals that you use for plowing are going to get to eat plenty of food. And even food that seems like it's mixed up with seasoning of some kind. Chametz. Interesting little word there. I'm a little bit reminded, I haven't done any research on this yet, but spontaneously reminded, if you go into the Ella Valley today where David and Goliath fought, there's this winery. There's a kibbutz, and there's a winery. And they take the seeds after they've made the wine, and they give it to the cow feed. Mm-hmm. Cows like it. So that's kind of what I'm envisioning here, that you have so much plenty, you can take the seeds and give it to the cows. And what I learned at another winery called Kadma, where she makes wine in the ancient system of these big, huge clay pots, is that in ancient days, the poor people are the only ones who drink water. And what they used to do is take the seeds of the wine and mix it with water, because some of the properties of the grape actually help kill bacteria. And so they take the dregs and put it in the water. So it's kind of like a bitter water, but it helps you. It's healthier than just plain water, because plain water makes you sick, because it's not, they didn't understand bacteria the way we do today. So it's interesting. So if you mix those two things together, you think, well, this time of plenty, you have so much that maybe even the poor people are drinking wine, and you can give all the seeds to the cattle, have them have extra good food. So I don't know much about the shovel and the pitchfork, how that expresses abundance, but somehow it must. And again, you have the mention of every high hill and high mountain, which we have in many contexts relating to foreign worship. But here, it seems to be opposite. There's going to be streams flowing with water, which is many times a symbol of God's teaching and his spirit.
The shovel must also be a sign of abundance, because normally when you winnow something, you take a sieve thing,
uh-huh,
and you do it. But if you're shoveling your stuff on...
Well,
in a quantity...
In a goren, you take the pitchfork and you jab it in, and you throw it up, and then the wind takes the light stuff away and the grain part falls.
Right. So in other words, you can just let the wind deal with it,
mm-hmm,
which must mean something to do with quantity. You're not having to preserve it and put it so tidily.
Yeah.
And sort of spoon it in so you don't waste anything.
Right. Maybe. It is interesting, this passage here, because when it talks about the towers falling and a lot of killing, kind of sounds like the cities are falling, but the people out in the pasture lands are fine. So it's kind of like a mixed metaphor a bit. Another thing that connects our passage is the mention of holidays. You see that? You're going to be happy as you are when celebrating a holiday. If you remember in our Deuteronomy passage, it says several times, go to the place God chooses and be happy before the Lord. And usually what that means is go have a big banquet. Go have meat. Meat in the ancient world is not something you eat every day. It's special. And so when you go up and have a big holy barbecue, that is something very special. Now, Deuteronomy points out you're not only allowed to eat meat at the temple, right? You can eat at other places. That's okay. But certainly when you go up to the temple, that would be the main time when you're having these holidays. Everyone's happy. You're eating to your heart's content, and you're getting to eat meat.
When we were reading the Deuteronomy bit, it talks, like you were saying, about go and make a banquet, whatever,
mm-hmm.
to the place where I've set for you. And I queried, you know, is this Jerusalem? Is this a...
Yeah.
But it suddenly occurred to me that the whole archaeological finds of Shiloh, where the tabernacle did sit, is really discovered or described or proved or whatever by the fact that everybody is sitting around and eating, and all the material, the archaeological stuff that they've got is to do with the fact that they were eating around the temple,
right.
Around the tabernacle.
So Deuteronomy, certainly, if you look all the passages together, the place where the Lord chooses is Jerusalem
eventually.
In Deuteronomy's eyes, eventually.
Eventually.
But we do know that the Ark of the Covenant was in Shiloh
right.
hundreds of years.
Right.
So it definitely was the temple before the temple in Jerusalem.
Right.
And interestingly enough, how many here have been to Shiloh? Anyone? If you go and visit, it's similar to Jerusalem because it's kind of like on a plateau that's a little bit under. There's all these hills around. Very much like Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And here in verse 29, we have Mountain of the Lord. So Mountain of the Lord would be referring to Jerusalem. Even though if it were older text, it may be referring to Sinai. But I think it's clear here that it's to Jerusalem where you're going up and having festivals.
Come on, let us go unto the Mountain of the Lord, Psalm 48.
And then it starts mixing God's judgment on the other nations with people celebrating here. So they're singing and celebrating, and God's going off and attacking enemies. And then he's going to bury them. That's kind of where all goes. Okay, so let's briefly look also at the other passage in Isaiah. Isaiah 32. We'll look at verse 9 and then verse 18. Okay. You complacent women, get up and listen to me. You carefree daughters, pay attention to what I say. In a year's time, you carefree ones will shake with fear. For the grape harvest will fail and the fruit harvest will not arrive. Tremble, you complacent ones. Shake with fear, you carefree ones. Strip off your clothes and expose yourselves. Put sackcloth on your waist. Mourn over the field, over the delightful fields and the fruitful vine. Mourn over the land of my people, which is overgrown with thorns and briars, and over all the once happy houses, and the city filled with revelry. For the fortress is neglected, the once crowded city is abandoned. Hill and watchtower are permanently uninhabited. Wild donkeys love to go there, and flocks graze there. This desolation will continue until new life is poured out on us from heaven. And what would that be a reference to?
I have until the Spirit is poured out.
Mama.
Well, I was thinking more in the context of the agricultural year, it would be rain.
Rain.
But it does say, Ruach mimarom, spirit from on high. Or you could say life, the spirit of life. Then the desert will become an orchard, and the orchard will be considered a forest. Justice will settle down in the desert, and fairness will live in the orchard. And this is maybe a takeaway for us. We're coming to the other two verses. I'm just going to make this a maquette here. Fairness will produce peace. So in Hebrew, Vehaya ma'aseh hatzdaka shalom. And it will be the action or the event of justice will be peace. And the work of righteousness will be calm and security forever. So I kind of like that, because the product of being just and fair is peace. My people will live in peaceful settlements and secure homes and in safe, quiet places. We'll read to the end of the section. Even if the forest is destroyed and the city is annihilated, you will be blessed. You who plant seed by all the banks of the streams, you who let your ox and donkey graze. Maybe verse 20 is also reminiscent of our Deuteronomy passage. So this idea that even if the cities are being annihilated, if you're following God, you don't have to be worried. You're going to be blessed, and you're going to be able to plant crops. Very interesting metaphor.
It's interesting because if you think of the if-then of Deuteronomy,
mm-hmm.
it's this starts up, rise up, you women who are at ease, hear my voice, mm-hmm. you complacent daughters. It's like people are sitting around saying, ah, it's okay. You know,
yeah.
We've got it made.
And that describes the north. I mean, you remember Amos, what he calls the women? Parot HaBashan.
Oh, yeah?
You cows of the Bashan, because have you guys been up to the Golan area? You see all the cows grazing? That's a great place for cows to graze. It gets them nice and fat. You come around this area, it's not so good for cows. So he compares the women of the north, in Jeroboam's time anyway, were rich. They just sat around. They didn't have much to do. So you eat, you have plenty, you get fat, you drink plenty of wine. And he's saying, like, you're complacent. And I think that's similar words here. You complacent women, get up and listen to me. And like everything you think you have, like this great harvest and all this stuff, it's going to fail. It's going to go. So, I see we're out of time. I think the takeaway when you look at this thing is that either way you look at it, whether you don't have rain or you do have rain, there's a dependency on God. That's ultimately what matters. And like Paul says, I've learned how to get along with nothing or with everything. You have to be dependent on God and Him alone. And that there's security. Even in the midst of when cities might be falling around you, if you're actually following Him and obeying Him, there is a security that you can enjoy. And you do get blessing. And then that little verse about fairness. I think part of following the Shema, trying to really seek for justice in a situation, not just for yourself, but for everybody. When you're really doing that, that's what's going to lead to peace. And so that, I mean, that can be worked out in different ways, but may it be part of our whole thinking and not just words we say. So with that, I'll say Shabbat Shalom, and you can make your way downstairs to the worship service.